Welcome everyone to another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. The NFL draft wrapped up last weekend, and teams across the league have also been busy signing undrafted free agents all week this week. So we thought, what better time than now to bring on Eric Long and Craig Anich from the Dynasty League podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network to help us hand out some grades from the draft, who won, who lost, who reached, who got the steals of the night, and then also the fantasy football implications of where the latest crop of rookie players entering the league went. We also break down with all the offseason moves that have happened, who are the biggest winners and losers fantasy football wise heading into the 2022 season as well too. So lots to cover. Let's get right into it. Sitting down with Craig Anich and Eric Long from the Dynasty League podcast. We've got Craig Anich and Eric Long from the Dynasty League podcast hopping on. Craig's relocated to the basement, so he's got his new studio going on.
Yeah, so, you know, it's good. There's no more police presence outside my window.
Oh, there you go. The standoff that Eric was so concerned about has finally come to an end. All right, lots to cover this evening, but I figure the easiest place to start right now, the teams that we know and love, will break down how did everyone's actual real-life teams do at the draft. So we're not talking fantasy football yet. We'll get to all that later on in the episode tonight. But, Craig, maybe starting with you. How did the Kansas City Chiefs do at this year's draft in your mind?
Loved it. Loved everything about it. They pretty well hit every need, trading up to get a cornerback for the first time in a long time. And he's just hyper aggressive, sticky corner. I can't wait to watch him play. Then we got George Karlaftis, who for some reason dropped. All I can think of is maybe he didn't have good flexibility around the bend for speed rushers, but the guy's so strong, just bowls people over anyways. So there goes our edge rushing need. Our pick, the wide receiver, everyone keeps on saying Tyreek Hill replacement. No one can do what Tyreek Hill does, but just another, like, just really good release, good route runner, and he's a hands catcher. I've been complaining about that for years. The too many Chiefs receivers let the ball come in their bodies and try to trap it instead of actually reaching out and catching it, and this guy's just got unreal hands. I think he had 4 drops his entire collegiate career or something like that. And again, like just the way the rest of the draft went, I mean, they spent 5 total picks on the secondary, which was a huge need. 2 safety, 3 corners. And the tackle they got too was another guy that dropped. Everything that, all the players that got dropped, so I'll be curious to see who was right at the end, right? Because it's, you always see the draft rankings and it's like, why is this person still available? He should have been picked by now. And it's just going to be curious to see how that all unfolds, because I mean, every single pick that the Chiefs made, they dropped farther than they were supposed to based on mocks or other boards. And the one guy, I'm super excited to see all these guys play. The one guy I might be most excited / nervous for was an undrafted free agent.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Justin Ross.
he's my pick for the most breakout wide receiver star.
I hope he's healthy, because that's really the main reason. Last time he was fully healthy, we saw him just light up the college football championships he had in the semifinals and the finals against Notre Dame and Alabama, combined like 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. Just lit it up. 6'3", 6'4", was the best receiver on that team, with their other receivers being T. Higgins and Hunter Renfro. And then he got a stinger the next year in practice and found out that he had, from x-rays, I'm going to butcher this, Klebsiella syndrome. And basically he had 2 parts of his vertebrae in that fuse, and it was causing the disc to bulge inwards. And it was basically, his risk was a bad hit and he's paralyzed, possibly dead. They basically told him that it's very likely his football playing career is over. They went through multiple doctors to see if he was available, if he was a candidate for the surgery. They ended up landing on the Pittsburgh Steelers spinal surgeon who did the surgery on Ryan Shazier. And basically they removed the disc that was bulging and attached a graft and a plate. So he has a graft and a plate in his upper neck now, spinal cord. And it's still, like, so many doctors were not going to let him play. They didn't clear him. Some did finally, including the Clemson one, so he was able to come back. And then just before his first practice, he gets COVID, loses 15 pounds, is out for another few months. Finally comes back, and he's just determined to do this at this point because he needs to show NFL scouts that he can get hit and not die, basically. which is as crazy as it sounds.
A pretty low bar right there.
Right? So he gets hit. He pops up and he's like calling his mom after the game. Do you see me? I got hit. I was fine. And then, you know, the rest of the season, before he even gets a chance to play maybe two full complete games, he gets a stress fracture in his foot. He refuses to go down because he needs to show this. And this is kind of what caused even more so his stock draft to plummet, because he went to the combine and tried to run and do his usual like workouts, but he was still dealing with offseason surgery from his foot fracture that he tried to play through throughout the college season. So if he can get back to, I don't care what team you cheer for, you want this guy to succeed. Yeah. Like, just an unreal story. And I'm super excited, but also just so nervous to have him on the team. Cause you want to see him to succeed, but you know, like there's that itch every time he's going to get hit. I'm just going to be, I think everyone's going to be like, oh God, get up.
Yeah.
So if he pulls through and everything's good, and he did play a full year on a fractured foot, taking hits and everything held up, man, what a steal.
Well, I was going to say too, right? Like, you look at how that first round was kind of mocked out, and obviously George Karlaftis fell quite a bit, and maybe Eric, the Boilermaker fan over here, can shine some light onto why his boy GK dropped in this year's draft. But really what it was is, even for those who were paying attention to the live draft show that we had going on, myself and the other Kyle had a parlay where we needed one more wide receiver to get taken, and it just didn't keep happening.
No.
And we thought for sure that the Chiefs were going to take Sky Moore at the end of the first round and save us, but then lo and behold, you know, George Karlaftis falls into their laps and they end up taking him in the second round. But like, this
worked out perfectly.
It worked out perfectly for everyone except for us, who actually bet on the thing. We order of how it happened was very important, because we had the over 6.5 and then only 6 went. So we needed that last one. Them and the Packers screwed us by not taking any wide receivers. But
you know what? I think part of that was like both those teams had wide receiver needs, but they played to their board and they're like, you know what? We can get a wide receiver later. It's not worth passing up on some other defensive players that we have here.
Yeah. And that's the theme for this entire draft was, I think a lot of teams took that model of, well, let's just sit back and see how this plays out right now. It didn't have that splashy, you know, let's trade up 20 picks to go get our guy. Here's every, you know, the Ricky Williams trade, take every first round draft pick we've got so that we can go out and get this quarterback or this all world talent. And
really what it was. Yeah. The quarterbacks, there's so many quarterback needy teams, but clearly, I mean, the scouts were not liking them.
No. And then once they started falling, it was like, well, okay, if no one's going to take him, there's only really one or two teams that still might take them. So we'll wait until round 3, round 4. So what's going to be interesting for you guys, though, as the Chiefs fans, is how weirdly linked this draft is to the Patriots. Because if you look at it, Trent McDuffie, you got that pick from the Patriots. Sky Moore, you got that pick from the Patriots. And even your 7th rounder, Jalen Watson, came through the Raiders, but that pick was originally the Patriots as well, too. So 3 of your picks in this year's draft were originally Patriots draft picks. And we'll get to the Patriots later on in this episode, because I feel like at least one of the 3 of us is going to be giving them a less than stellar grade. But I mean, that's going to be an interesting one, considering how that AFC, for years, it's kind of a superpower battle between the Patriots and Chiefs. And now look at this, where you landed some key players, shut down corner, potentially a high-end wide receiver, and then a nice depth piece there. And they all came from Belichick and Co.
Yeah, the really interesting one was the separate second-round trade they made, because they made it to the Chiefs traded back and the Patriots moved up. And the Patriots grabbed the receiver with that pick. So it was kind of like, okay. I would have thought after seeing that it was going to be a receiver, that it'd be a guy that the Chiefs wanted. And maybe that was part of the deal. Like, okay, well, we know you want this pick for a receiver. Who's it going to be? Because depending on the answer, we're not going to trade you. But that's going to be an interesting comparative along the way. Thornton versus Moore, just to see.
Well, speaking of AFC, let's continue along to our lovable friend Eric. Your Colts getting mixed reviews depending on who you listen to out there. What did you think of their draft?
I don't know. Do the Colts have any draft picks anymore?
Yes.
you know, I'm happy we got another wide receiver to fill the void that T.Y. Hilton left, but I am super, super happy with our third round pick, the tight end that we got. He's so good.
Jelani Woods?
Jelani Woods. I couldn't think of the last name. The last name left me. I knew his first name was
You're
Jelani.
You're so thrilled with that draft pick. You don't even know his name.
Do you want a name draw?
I forgot his last name. It was slipping me. And I'm like, oh, God, what is it? And it couldn't come to me. The guy's an athletic freak. He'll be buried under Mo Alley Cox on the depth chart, but I don't know. I think, you know, at some point he'll get some playing time. He's 6'7", 200, close to 250 pounds, runs a 4.6. That's great.
How do you have all of these stats memorized, but you couldn't remember his name?
I don't know, Kyle.
Would you be talking about Jelani Woods?
Yes. I knew his first name was Jelani. It just the last name slipped my mind.
Well, another round three pick for you guys that you guys should be pretty pumped about is Bernard Raimann, because here is a guy who can play anywhere on that line, a lot of versatility, and he has really only been playing the position for a very short amount of time. And there was even some fringe talk of, could he be an early second rounder? Does a team fall in love with the fact that he can play pretty much any position up there and actually take him late in the first? So the fact that you guys got him at 77 overall is huge value there for you guys.
Yeah, happy about that. I'm right there with you.
All right. Well, for me, holy geez, that was a roller coaster ride of emotions. I went all the way from, oh God, Howie is galaxy braining this again. He's going to screw everything up, to this is the greatest draft ever, and everywhere in between on that night, because they trade up, they end up taking Jordan Davis, which in the moment I didn't like. But based on how the entire draft ended up playing out, I now actually really like, because when they initially traded up, I thought it was Kyle Hamilton. Because number one, I was amazed that Kyle Hamilton did end up falling out of the top 10. I think that'll be one that you look back on a couple of years from now. And if he reaches his full potential, he's easily maybe even top five talent on the board there. So based on how much of a glaring need this friggin' secondary in Philadelphia's hat for years now, this isn't just like a 1 year, oh, last year wasn't great, like let's put a band-aid on this. It's been years of just burnt toast in that secondary. So I was really hoping that they traded up to get him. They go out and they get Jordan Davis. Yeah, there was a huge need on that defensive line. They needed to get younger. He's a huge body out there. Monster. Probably underrated on that Georgia Bulldogs record-setting defense as well too. Didn't get as much love as some of his counterparts, but I like it now in hindsight, knowing how the draft played out. But in the moment, pretty disappointed they didn't take him. Then all of a sudden, it's Eagles have made a trade, and it hasn't been announced yet what the trade is. All I see is, okay, great. They're trading back now. Like, we have a whole bunch of options that I really liked on the board. I thought they were going to trade back a bunch of spots. So now I'm livid. So now not only do they not have Hamilton, but now they're moving back further in the draft in my mind. Then it gets announced that, oh, it's A.J. Brown is coming to town, so we're just going to take Howie's inability to draft a wide receiver and competently get him to the NFL level and just say, all right, here's a proven commodity. Let's go with him. The added bonus is Jalen Reagor is so upset by, you know, him getting thrown under the bus, is that he's essentially packing his own bags and moving himself out of town. So that's great. Two birds, one stone. Already, I'm now thinking, all right, this is fantastic. Great night one. Here we go. Day two rolls around. I can't believe that N'Kobe Dean is still on the board. I'm thinking, oh my God, come on, round two. Let's go out and take him. We need linebacker help. We just let Singleton walk. All of a sudden, you know, number 56 comes up and they take center Cameron Jurgens out of Nebraska. And again, I'm now upset with how, what is going on here? Like, here are the guys that I want. You're never taking them. This always ends up coming back to bite us. You think you're playing chess, but really you're playing Connect Four. And it's just, again, classic Howie Roseman draft. Don't think in any way, shape, or form N'Kobe Dean will still be there in round three. Move forward to round three. They end up getting the guy that we wanted anyways. I'm now happy. And now that based on how the draft has played out, I'm even happy that we took Jurgensen in that second round, because now you've got Kelsey's replacement and he can learn from one of the best centers in the game. So I literally went from fire Howie on that night, which I mean, I haven't made any secrets of it. I am not a Howie Roseman fan. And whether he actually made any of those picks or he was bound and gagged and stuffed in a closet and they had some, you know, front office analytics nerd actually making those picks, I have no idea. But whoever is making those picks, I will give you your flowers right now. You did a fantastic job. Couldn't have been happier with how that draft played out for Philadelphia. So it was an interesting night for the Midnight Green faithful, though. Let me just say that.
Speaking of Jason Kelce, I think he had one of the best draft moments that night. Wasn't he like doing a podcast? And then when he found out that they were getting AJ Brown, he left and then he came back with his shirt off.
Yep. He was doing a live podcast, ran off screen. They could hear a commotion going on in the background and then he just came back on with the shirt off. So Jason Kelce, absolute salt of the earth individual right there.
What did he do off camera?
I don't know.
And then he just comes out without a shirt, like, the hell? No, awesome. What do you make of why he dropped so much? I mean, I guess there was the pectoral injury, but is that going to cost him the start of the season?
So here's the reason for it is, yeah, the pectoral injury. They think, okay, he's 5'11", bit undersized, blah, blah, blah. So it's the classic case of teams have had too long to think about it and are overcomplicating it. Like, it's not a long-term injury. They've already said that he could be ready for the start of the season. Is he going to need surgery? They don't think so. If they're going to need surgery, they can do it now and he'll still be ready at some point this season.
Yeah, it's not Tommy John surgery.
Yeah. No. What do you have playing in the background right now?
I was just walking through my house. Leah's got the TV on.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, don't worry. It's not like we're doing anything here.
We're still connected.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And all we can hear is the TV.
Yeah. Good Lord.
I'm back here now, so.
All right. Oh, that was good. Okay. Where were we? Were we, Dean? So, something about.
We're moving on to the next thing.
Something about.
Right. What I was going to say was, I think that's the same reason why Hamilton fell, is people were just overthinking it. Like, he had a slow 40 time. Forget about it. That's straight line lining up as a track star. Like, no one does that. Treylon Burks, for his 40 time, he ran slower than people thought. Well, he also stumbled out of the gates because he's not used in a 3-point stance when he's playing football. Like, you can see immediately, like, his first 10 yards, he had a little trip up. That's why he ran slower.
You talk to people who actually watch football and know how the game is played and all the thinking and decision-making, and like, every single one of them say that N'Kobe Dean is the smartest player in the draft, has the highest football IQ in the draft. Sideline to sideline speed is unbelievable. Tackle machine, like, all the things you want to hear out of a linebacker. And people just look at, oh, well, what's his size? Or, you know, oh, okay, well, here's an injury that might cost him a little bit of training camp. You're drafting a person for his career, not for what could he possibly do week one and whether he might miss that or not, which by the sounds of it, he won't even miss it. So it's a non-factor there. So it's, again, it's just people trying to be the smartest person in the room and overlooking the eyeball test, the common sense test, all these things, and trying to find a flaw in someone's game.
Yeah, it sounds weird to say, but it's like, hey, is this guy a football player? Yeah. Looked at the tape. Yeah, he's a football player and he's really good at it. There you go.
Well, it's like everyone who is knocking Kenny Pickett for having small hands. And oh, look, he's the only quarterback taken in the first round. So it's like, okay, guys, at a certain point,
still throw the ball. It's weird.
Yeah, but I mean, when you have Donald Trump hands, it's not easy.
By the way, I measured, like, I measured my own hands when I saw his measuring, and it's the same as mine, basically.
Yeah,
like, it's not like it's a small hand. It's just small compared to other quarterbacks. He can still hold the football.
Right, and for those listening, have you ever seen Craig throw a football? Not pretty.
You haven't seen me throw a football. Come on. I can throw him over to Manton.
All right, let's shift over to fantasy implications. We'll save the overall winner and loser of the draft for our grand finale. So fantasy football implications. We're talking the 2022 season here, heading into drafts. The big question, normally coming out of these drafts, there's at least one or two fantasy rookie quarterbacks who you kind of want to have on your squad. If we put aside dynasty leagues, so this is just a standard redraft league, is there any quarterback that you would draft on draft night for 2022 that you think will have relevance?
No. not really. Not that I'd draft. Let me put it up. I wouldn't draft. Might I free agent, see how it goes later on? Sure. Like the only two guys I can think of really would be Pickett and Corral. And that's just because Corral, because I think Matt Rhule's fighting for his job this year. And he's going to need to show something other than what we've seen from Sam Darnold. And Carolina still has decent weapons. McCaffrey's healthy. And you still have DJ Moore, who puts up, like, he's the next coming of, I'm sure we'll touch on it at some point, the Hawkins, who played with terrible quarterbacks and still put up numbers. Like, DJ Moore plays with terrible quarterbacks, and he is still 1,000-yard receiver. So if Matt Corral can just be semi-average, it might be worth holding on to him for that spot, right? Like, it might be worth it to have a guy who could potentially be dumping it to McCaffrey if he's healthy, and DJ Moore being DJ Moore.
Yeah.
But that's all I can really think of.
I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat as you here. Again, we're not talking dynasty. So if you're talking dynasty, yeah, you probably want to take a flyer on, you know, a Ridder or a Willis or something like that, see what they can do long term. But in the short term, unless you're in like a 20-person league or something, if you're in a 10 or 12-person league, there's absolutely no reason to go out there and burn draft capital on one of these guys this year, because Willis isn't starting this year. Ryan Tannehill's already saying he's not even going to mentor the guy today. I don't know if you guys heard that.
No, I missed not. That.
Yeah. No, please indulge me.
Ryan Tannehill was very adamant that it's not his job to mentor Malik Willis in Tennessee. And if he happens to learn a thing or two from watching him, then that's great, I guess, was essentially the gist of his quote. But I don't think he's any too happy about, number one, AJ Brown being traded, and number two, Malik Willis getting drafted to the Titans.
Yeah, no kidding. And like, it's not a contract year for Tannehill, is it?
I
can't remember offhand. Maybe it was just the chance, like this might be his last with a chance for the Titans to do something, but it just seemed, maybe that's where the rumors are coming for more, just so much that the Titans would fit up with them, but.
No, it's, he's still signed through 2024. He's got some clauses, but there's a potential out in 2023 where there's only an $18 million dead cap hit. So that, as opposed to if they buy him out this year, it's $57 million in dead cap. Right. So that's where it is here.
Yeah, this could be that pick works out for the Titans. This could be Tannehill's last year with them, and he's probably not too happy about the way the season ended anyways, and then you get rid of one of his favorite targets. Yeah, I'd be pissed, I guess. I mean, don't throw an interception at the start of the game and start the half and playoff game, but, you know, I'd be pissed if I was him too.
Well, it'll be an interesting year in Tennessee for sure. But yeah, I mean, like we were saying, though, I don't see any of these rookie QBs coming in and setting the world on fire. Maybe, you know, you can talk me into second half, start looking at picking up Ridder and stashing him if the Atlanta Falcons are really bottoming out. And, you know, Mariota is throwing lame ducks out there and just getting intercepted three times a game. Okay, yeah, let's see, you know, maybe there's a juicy matchup where they're playing, you know, Seattle or something like that. And it'll be a less than stellar defensive showing for both teams. And they go out there and he can scramble a little bit and put up a fantasy relevant game. But it would definitely be a spot start style thing. It wouldn't be, all right, this is my guy, I'm gonna ride and die with him here. Eric, you got anyone that you like out of this year's draft class?
No, I don't. I mean, even if Kenny Pickett dethrones Mitch Trubisky, which might not take too long to happen, I don't really see him being very fantasy relevant. I could be wrong. He could be the best player in the league at the end of the year, better than Patrick Mahomes. Probably not. So I just don't see it. I mean, if you're in a keeper league and it's like you're in the last round and you want to take a flyer on the guy and he ends up playing really, really well. But even that, like, quarterbacks aren't super early targets. So, I mean, yeah, maybe take a flyer if you're in a keeper. Maybe if it's deep as well and you start two QBs. But, I mean, we're talking about a very fringe niche situation where, you know, Kenny Pickett might be a good option. You know, he could. But I just don't think so.
I almost think like it's almost just a random, like, I wouldn't be shocked if Pittsburgh drafts a quarterback again next year. This feels like it was a flyer for them as well. I'm just, we'll see.
A flyer in the first round. You guys heard it here first. A flyer.
Bold draft strategy.
Josh Rosen. Okay, if it doesn't work out in year one and they don't like what they see, teams have no problems drafting another quarterback the next year.
Yeah, but you're right? giving you up a huge it. Opportunity and a really good player. Yeah. What was Rosen drafted? What? Fucking number it eight, happens, number nine? Man.
He was but 10th, wasn't he?
It happens in the NFL. Jordan Love, like, it's not smart, but it doesn't mean that, you know what I mean? Like,
pick 10.
Still happen.
Yeah, but I get it. I get it if, like, a guy drops to, like, the second or third round. Like, maybe back in 2012.
Rated up.
Maybe if, you know, back in 2012 and Russell Wilson's like, oh, we're in the second round. Maybe not really a need that we have. We need quarterback, but maybe we'll just see how it happens. Maybe then. Mm-hmm. But if you're picking number 10 overall, there is elite level guys on defense.
Yeah, and they picked Josh O-line, Rosen and traded
and
him
they picked Josh
year.
Rogan. But like you, I don't think you pick a guy at 10 unless you legitimately think he has a shot. You're not like, oh, right. Well, we'll just wing it. We'll do the McGruber. And we'll just see what happens.
I'm not saying it's smart. I'm just saying that I think they thought at the time, you know what? It might be worth the risk. He could be this. It doesn't mean that it was a surefire thing.
I don't know. I like
the QB competition there. I'm curious to see what happens with Trubisky.
Well, who knows? Maybe
to see if it's even going to be an issue this year at all, or whether it is going to be, as you say, Mitch Trubisky, the Steelers aren't bad enough to bottom out. They're always going to sort of hang around 500. They're, you know, kind of in that playoff mix for most of the year. Like, that's not usually when, all right, three games left in the season and we need to win them all. Let's throw our rookie QB in here, right? Like, so it's really going to depend. How do the Steelers start this season? If they start out 5-1, you know, we might not even see Kenny Pickett this season at all.
Awesome. Greg, if you're going to take a flyer on Josh Rosen, wouldn't it be a better idea to take a flyer on Lamar Jackson, who was still available at the time?
Okay.
Wouldn't that have been the better flyer?
Flyer was the wrong term. But what I'm getting at is teams aren't afraid to move on from a first quarterback after 1 year.
Kyle, can you please lambast?
If you're not sure the transfer from the first seven here, come on. Maybe they aren't sure what kind of year he would have, but they like the tools that he has. He's a low floor, high floor, low ceiling kind of guy. Like, maybe he works out for them, right? But I don't think it means that they're going to be afraid to move on from him if it doesn't work out and Trubisky doesn't work out next year. It's a much deeper QB class next year.
I think the entire point that they took Kenny Pickett in the first round this year, where they did, is shocking in and of itself, because you look at where everyone else went. Not only could they have waited, they could have waited a couple of rounds to have needed that to have actually gone through. And I don't think there were too many other teams who had Kenny Pickett as the number one QB on their board. Like, I don't know who they were competing against that they felt that they needed to take Kenny Pickett in the first round with the 20th overall pick. Like, who was getting ready to hop all over him?
Unless all teams thought he was the only first round talent. And then you can maybe suggest that maybe Tennessee would have gone for him, right? But,
well, it's weird because they were clearly putting up a smokescreen, because even before the combine, every quote out of friggin' Tomlin's mouth was how much he loved Malik Willis. Like, everyone and their grandmother had Willis pegged to the Steelers. If they were going to take someone in the first round, no one would have been shocked if it had been Malik Willis. And then they go and they took Kenny Pickett. So
yeah,
I don't know. I don't really get that one. That's a head scratcher.
For sure, smoke screens. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just saying if the Pittsburgh Steelers don't have a good year, don't be surprised if they pick quarterback again next year.
Kyle, could you please lambast Craig for his Josh Rosen comments?
So, Eric, are you officially ready to give up on Chosen Rosen at this point in his career? Only 4 years removed from his draft.
Hey, listen, you know, now that he's in Atlanta, he's got Marcus Mariota and who was the other guy drafted this year? Desmond Ridder. Who knows? Maybe he flies up that depth chart and finds a starting gig and has chemistry with the most part of cord wide receivers that are unproven or just not good.
This is his year.
Yes, clearly.
Well, as of right now, Josh Rosen is not even listed on the Atlanta Falcons roster. It's Desmond Ridder, Marcus Mariota, and Felipe Franks, whoever that guy is.
Well,
Well, he's not Josh Rosen, so he's a bum.
Yeah. He's not Josh Rosen. And if I know Craig, and I think I do, he's going to pass up Philippe real quick, and they're going to be carrying him off the field in week 18 like Rudy.
There you go. Ooh, all right, moving on. Who would have thought that we would be on a Josh Rosen rabbit hole on this episode? But there you go. Wide receivers. So a lot of top-end talent and wide receivers. A lot of guys that'll be fantasy relevant that next year. So out of all the wide receivers, based on where they wound up, who are you most high on heading into this draft out of that rookie class?
I mean, it might be a bit obvious. It might be a little bit later on in the season, but I still just friggin' love Jameson Williams, and he's going to get all the opportunity in the world in Detroit. That's a team that's, I mean, they've spent a few years bottom of the draft, but if you look at their roster, it's starting to look competent again. And especially on offense, they actually have some playmakers there. And it's just Jared Goff needs open receivers to throw to. He's not the guy to trust receivers making plays or getting open. And it just, Jameson Williams can get very open. So to me, that just seems like a slam dunk whenever he does get healthy. Like there's your, I don't know when you'd want him to go in the draft. That's going to be interesting. He'll probably go pretty late. Someone will take a flyer on him and just hold on to him. But yeah, his route running is too good to not succeed.
Yeah. And again, you know, Williams currently still recovering, still a long ways away from training camp, long ways away from the season. So who knows, you know, we saw an absolute freak recovery timeline out of Cam Akers last year. So who knows? This could be,
you don't know,
a situation where he could be ready to go for week one. He could be ready to go for week eight. Until we get close to the actual start of the season and when these drafts are taking place, you can kind of factor that in. But yeah, it would be a phenomenal stash. I think I like his talent the most out of anyone in that class. But again, availability will play a factor into how high you take him. The Jared Goff factor there isn't exactly screaming, you know, elite QB1. I probably like Drake London next talent-wise out of everyone, but kind of the same deal, right? Marcus Mariota in Atlanta. Kyle Pitts will probably be getting double-teamed all day, so there is opportunity for him to get open. I like his skill set. Mike Evans clone. Big body in that red zone, could put up some decent numbers, but might be a little boom or bust in some of those games there for the Falcons. So I'm actually going to go with Garrett Wilson in New York, who I might not like long-term to have the best career out of any of them, but in terms of who's going to be the most impactful rookie wide receiver, I'm going to go with him with that Jets team, because I'm not sold on Zach Wilson, but they're probably going to be playing from behind in quite a few games. So the targets will be there. He could easily step in and possibly be wide receiver one by like week four, right? Elijah Moore's team right now, but you stack both of their skill sets up against one another. If Wilson adjusts the way that a lot of scouts are projecting that he adjusts to the NFL, it's only a matter of time until he becomes the guy in New York. So
I'm glad you brought up Elijah Moore, because I think it just kind of proves if you're talented enough wide receiver, it doesn't really matter to a certain extent who your quarterback is or how much they suck, because Elijah Moore put up great numbers once he was given the opportunity last year, regardless of who was at quarterback.
Yeah.
So
for me, the wide receiver that I think will be fantasy relevant compared to where he was taken is the boss, Justin Ross.
I hope so, man. I mean, like, if you haven't heard him, because he has been away from the spotlight as far as quality playing the last few years, do yourself a favor and just look at some highlights from his 2019 year, the last time he was really healthy, and he's just unreal. So I understand it. Like, he was a projected first round pick to go alongside where kind of where Drake London went. So I just hope for the guy. I really do.
Eric, just for you, I'm gonna make our first bold prediction of the season here. All right. So, Eric, I am going to say right now, May 3rd, 2022, with no information whatsoever on how his training camp is going to go, I am going to say that Wilson puts up over 1,000 yards receiving for the New York Jets this season.
You're more than welcome to think so.
So here's a fun bit of trivia, Eric. Let's see if you can get this. Since 2007, only one Jets wide receiver has had over 1,000 yards receiving. Who is it?
Okay.
Since 2007.
Seven.
So this just goes to show how vaunted that wide receiving core has been in New York for the past decade.
So plus. I have a name in mind, and I honestly can't remember if he even played on that team. There's a chance he did. And if he did, I think he might have gotten 1,000, but I could be wrong. I'm leaning towards Brandon Marshall.
Honestly, 2015, Brandon Marshall put up 1,500 yards just an out of nowhere. Compared to the rest of that receiving course.
I was thinking back at their past wide receivers, but I'm like, no, Keyshawn Johnson, he left way before 2007.
Yeah. Prior to Brandon Marshall, he had to go back to 2007 for Jericho Cotchery. This is the last one.
Oh yeah.
There's a name. There's a couple other receivers.
Fred, get to the point.
They are in a good position for where they were drafted. And like first one, Christian Watson, Green Bay. There's no more Devontae Adams.
Someone's got to catch the ball.
There's no Valdez Scantling anymore. Like, who's he going to throw to? How about the 6'4" athletic freak? Okay. Like, that's the guy that could end up having just a monster year.
And as anyone who's ever owned Aaron Jones knows, Aaron Rodgers will throw the ball every single time. Even if he's on the 1 yard line, it's still going to be a receiving touchdown. So
it's going to be, he's going to have a big learning curve, but I think he can figure it out. So I like that pick from Green Bay. And then I can never pronounce, I don't know if there's no accent. I think it's just Olav.
Chris Olave.
Is it Olave? Olav? Olav? I don't know.
Olave.
Olave. So there needs to be an accent there. Anyways.
You're showing your French Canadianness right now there. You need an accent aigu.
Accent aigu. I think Winston might have to unload a bit more this year. Who knows what's going to happen with Kamara? So Thomas plus Olave, I think they're gonna air it out a bit more, so I can see him having a solid year.
No, another good Ohio State product there. So definitely lots to choose from in the wide receiver ranks. Running back wise, no running backs taken in the first round, so everyone was kind of sour on the backfield this year, but there is still some value there. So out of everyone who got taken, let's phrase it this way: who's gonna score the most fantasy points in 2022 over the rookie running backs?
Well, I don't know. It's tough, right? It's tough. Because as you said, there wasn't a lot of big names there. Like Breece Hall is in New Orleans and, you know.
Incorrect.
New York Jets.
New York Jets.
Which, really?
Yeah.
Oh, why did I think he went to New Orleans? All right. Breece Hall might put up the most points. If everybody,
he might.
But I don't know.
Going to get opportunity with the Jets,
but they drafted Michael Carter last year, and he had a fine season. He had an okay season.
I think we're starting to see more of a trend where there's going to be two backs, and I think you just kind of have to roll with it. Like there's going to be not so much a committee where there's three or four guys. Hello, San Francisco. But I think a 1-2 punch is going to be something that teams go for now. They're going to look for quality touches versus quantity with their backs. It's going to be, I mean, they still do it with the rare breeds, but like Taylor and Henry, but even then, I mean, Henry's so close to breaking down, I think. He's been working so hard. This could be his last good year.
Right. Well, without AJ Brown to stretch the field either and open up some of those tackle boxes.
He's going to get like 500 touches this year.
Maybe Kenneth Walker, just because Seattle seems to be able to pump out a relatively unknown, like a random 1,000-yard rusher, a new one every season. So,
well, Kenneth Walker, it was my pick there because you look at, again, where all the running backs went. Seattle's backfield is like a morgue all the time. Like, how many injuries do Seattle running backs suffer every single year?
Yeah.
Whether it's Carson, whether it's Penny, like no one can stay healthy back there. So it's not for lack of talent, it's for lack of staying on the field. But you also look at the fact that Pete Carroll runs, even in the best of times when he had Russell Wilson as quarterback, one of the most run-heavy offenses in the league. Do you think Drew Lock is going to be chucking it up 50 times a game? If they are, God help the Seattle Seahawks fans. So
isn't Geno's, I think, going to start there, is he not?
Well, there'll be a tryout. It'll be a camp battle to watch, but
who knows? Maybe former Indianapolis pick Jacob Eason could come out of the mix. Who right knows?
Here. Yeah, who knows? We'll wait and see. He'll still have to battle out, though. But I'm with you, Kyle. Carson gets injured all the time. Even when Rashad Penny had a good stretch towards the end of the last year where it was like, okay, maybe this is his chance finally. But they, I mean, that was his fourth year. They declined his fifth year, or this is his fourth year, and they declined his fifth year option. So they're already looking past him a little bit. So I think there's all the chances in the world, regardless of even injury, that they're going to give Kenneth Walker a really good look there. Yeah. The other guy I want to mention, James Cook for Buffalo.
Yeah.
They have been looking for a steady back who can take 20 carries. They've been going back and forth between Moss and Zach Singletary. Moss and Singletary. And you can still see it last year, Josh Allen can run the ball, but you don't want him rushing 16 times in a game and taking all those hits. Like,
well,
he's too valuable. He's good at it, but when necessary, like with having James Cook there, there's a really good shot that he can take over number one back duties and just really ease the load and get an actual, there was games last year where there's like all the rushes were by Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't there a game where Singletary maybe had one rush and Allen had like 12 or 13 and the rest were all passes?
Well, they just alternated who was in the doghouse every single week between Moss and Singletary. Like, whoever got the start would instantly either fumble or put up like 1.3 yards per carry, and then they would just be alternating people in and out. So at worst, though, in Buffalo, what Cook has going for him is, out of any of those three backs, he's easily already, as a rookie, the best pass catcher out of those three. So he's going to have a role already on passing downs. And then, as you say, if he can show some competence there, it's not like he's got an entrenched all-pro veteran ahead of him on that depth chart. So he could take it and run with it for sure.
Yep. And you know what? Like, I mean, don't discount that Dalvin Cook is his brother. No. I think there's a good way to, like, he could be very well prepared for the NFL season just based off of Dalvin Cook's experiences.
All right, let's get to the biggest fantasy winner. So this isn't the team that had the best draft. This is what player benefited the most from the draft picks that happened on draft night. So it could be draft picks, could be trades that happened, undrafted free agent signings, maybe even a suspension. Our friend DeAndre Hopkins with the 6-game ban to start the season. Not great news in Arizona there. So who was the biggest fantasy winner from your standpoint, Eric?
So I've got two. The most obvious would be Jalen Hurts and getting another guy alongside Devonta Smith. Great receiver, throw the ball to. I think fantasy-wise, even though he finished – as a top five QB last year with me being correct with my bold prediction.
Were you?
I was.
I don't think you ever mentioned that on air.
I don't remember you even mentioning that.
Anyways, I think Jalen Hurts is a big winner. Could even level up his game even more with that kind of guy. And for the lack of drafting a wide receiver, I'd say Alan Lazard. Big winner for Green Bay being the alpha dog at wideout.
For now.
The Alan Lazard experience is certainly a unique one for sure. For anyone
bold,
who's ever
guys, bold prediction. Alan Lazard gets 1,000 yards rushing.
Rushing.
Wow. Whoa. We are getting that bold
is,
tonight.
That is bold. That is bold.
1,000 yards receiving.
Well, I'm kind of in the same boat just because they're of having two people, and it's because it kind of happened out of one trade. And I'm glad you mentioned Hopkins, because the fact that the Hollywood Brown trade seemed to have been in the works for a while makes me think that the Cardinals knew he was going to eventually test positive there. And by the way, I wish I looked it up before. I just thought of it now. There was a commentator on Reddit who actually had a link. Basically, there was four players that all worked under this one guy, but three out of the four had all tested positive the past year, and the only one that didn't was Hopkins, and now he did. So
I thought you were going to say the only one who didn't was Tom Brady, and that trainer was Guerrero.
No, it was they had all tested positive. I can't remember. It was a group of cornerbacks and receivers, I think, but the three other players tested positive for PEDs, and Hopkins managed to avoid it last year. So it was almost like you could kind of see it coming a bit. And I wonder if the Cardinals had a little inkling as well, because they went out and got Hollywood Brown And that's going to be huge for the first 6 weeks
and overpaid of the season. For him.
Yeah. Well,
overpaid, but out of necessity, I think. Yeah. And then the other the other guy that's going to benefit from that, I think, is the fact that the Ravens didn't really replace him. They have Bateman, but they didn't really replace him. So I think Mark Andrews is going to get even more touches.
Oh, he stole mine. You son of
a... I'm sorry. You can expand on it. Go ahead.
No, it's so true. I want to quickly touch on the point about did the Cardinals know something was in the works? I don't profess to be an NFL insider with the exact series of events here, but it was announced the same day that the NFL news broke that he was going to be suspended. In that same release, they already said that Hopkins has withdrawn his appeal of the suspension. So it could have been one of those things where the Ravens knew Hopkins initially appealed it. They, you know, delayed the process a little bit. They went out there, they acquired Hollywood Brown as sort of that fail safe break in case of emergency. And then when the news actually broke, obviously they had someone already in place. So it could have been that way. Don't know how the exact inner workings work, but I wouldn't have been surprised if, that's how it kind of shook down there, and that appeal and its withdrawal was what allowed the Ravens to actually end up shipping Hollywood over to the Cardinals. But all the same reasons you just said, Mark Andrews, I mean, he could be in line for like prime Travis Kelce tight end one style receiving yard totals. And that's saying something because he had a huge year last year. He had 1,300 receiving yards and it was already their number one threat. But right under him, Marquise Brown, 1,000 yards receiving. And then you got to go all the way to Bateman at 500 yards. Like the fall off is so huge.
Bateman joined the season late. Maybe they love him. He was a former first round. He just was, again, it was one of those late guys. So maybe that's part of it. But I still think you're going to be turning to Andrews way more. And I just found the list of players here. So AJ Boye, Will Fuller, and Bradley Roby were all caught for PEDs and trained with Kango. I don't know who that is. At the Kango way. So he's some kind of trainer, I guess. But all three of those guys were caught and missed time during 2020. Only one that didn't was Hopkins, and now he has. So that entire group that had trained with this guy popped for PEDs.
The Kango way is not the TB12 way, that much is for sure.
No.
All right, well, if we take the flip side of the coin here, who are the biggest fantasy losers based on what happened at the draft?
So mine is, it's weird. I think real life, not a loser, but fantasy-wise, I think Josh Allen's QB numbers may dip a bit because with James Cook there, I don't think they're going to ask him to rush as much. And that was just such a huge amount of his fantasy points. I mean, it might not end up hurting as much. He might be like, he's going to be passing the ball as well as he did. Like I still see him being a top five quarterback, but if you're expecting a crazy amount of rushing touchdowns, it might not happen with him this year.
I'll go Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that.
I think without AJ Brown, that's horrible. And then teams being able to focus a bit more on Henry, not, you know, being able to stuff that run game. And that run game is a big part of why their pass game is successful.
Now they did draft Treylon Burks, right? Which was like,
well, who cares?
Coming, it's the next coming of AJ Brown, but it sounds like it's more of, like you were saying, it's more of maybe for next year. Like he is considered unpolished route runner, more of a try to get the ball in his hands versus letting him get open. So, yeah.
Treylon Burks, a little bit of a sleeper winner of the draft, having gone right into a Tennessee Titans camp that doesn't really have a number one wide receiver, because not only did they lose AJ Brown, but Julio Jones, the corpse of Julio Jones that was there last year, is also gone too. So maybe might not have put up a ton of catches, but took a lot of snaps, was out there. Like there's some target share that has opened up in Nashville for sure.
It's wild. This is why Derrick Henry is going to rush the ball for 700 times this year. Like he's going to
rush the ball touches. You heard it here first. He's rushing it for 700 yards this year. Greg's bold prediction.
Until he breaks down. But no, it's no. He's going to get like 1,000 touches. The number's going to keep on going up the more we talk about it here.
But by the end of this podcast, he's touching the ball 1,500 times. So all he has to do is just average a yard and a half per touch, and he's set. I've got two losers from the draft. Number one, and it's not exactly a wily veteran here, but talk about going into already a tough situation in your rookie year, and now, based on what's happened in the draft, an even tougher situation in your sophomore year, you've got Justin Fields in Chicago. So, got sacked on something ridiculous like 10% of his dropbacks last year. Huge holes on the line. Did the Chicago Bears go out and address that? Nope. They took cornerbacks and DBs with all of their top end picks there. And so he's going to be left out to dry, right? They lose Allen Robinson. So again, he had a major, major down year last year, but was at least a veteran presence in there. Replaced him with essentially a Darnell Mooney clone with a very similar skill set. And so they're not replacing any kind of different deep vertical threat downfield here. So he's got nothing to work with in Chicago. He is going to have a rough season right there.
I was going to say, no, I agree. It's too bad. It's too bad that they didn't work on his O-line. There is some good game film out there where Justin Fields has done some really good stuff with a decently clean pocket. Now, I mean, that can be said for many quarterbacks. All they need is a clean pocket and, you know, things aren't all hunky-dory. But he looked really, really good when he actually had a bit of time to step up and actually make a throw.
I think he's a talented quarterback for sure, right? But they're just not surrounding him or putting him in any kind of position to succeed in Chicago. And the Chicago media market isn't exactly a forgiving place. They want some results. So it could be a long year for Justin Fields with the Bears in the NFC North. My second loser had nothing to really do with the draft, but was something that got announced in the days leading up to the draft, is Javonte Williams, because Melvin Gordon ended up getting re-signed by the Broncos. So he was looking like someone who was going to be an absolute breakout candidate, maybe even in the same vein of how Jonathan Taylor just exploded last year. Might not put up the same totals, but he was going to be the guy in the Mile High City. And now you've got Melvin Gordon coming in. I still think Williams is the RB1 there, but that's obviously going to eat into his workload a little bit. So his draft stock took a bit of a hit in my mind leading up there.
Yeah, I think that leans more towards that. Some teams are trying to have two stable running backs and you just have to try to get the best one kind of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, signing a guy.
It should be.
What was the money that was spent on Melvin Gordon? You really should be paying that guy like that. I just think if you're going to get another running back to compliment the guy, get a veteran, but guy who's decent but doesn't cost that much. Go out and get side piece Singletary to match up with.
Side piece Singletary. All right.
Yeah. I know, Craig. I'm hilarious.
It was a good joke.
Well, that he's taking credit for a joke that was not his.
I laugh.
Coach that.
No, that joke was mine. That joke was mine. I'm the one who put it in the chat.
First of all, it was said that Singletary was a side piece on the NFL Draft Live special.
Correct.
That we did. So
correct,
you're now saying who? Because you put it in writing, what you heard on the episode, that the joke is yours.
I rearranged the words to make side piece Singletary, and I put it in quotation marks so that everyone understood that it was a coined phrase. Side.
I missed the trademark logo.
Eric original.
Yeah. All right. Let's put
Folks,
aside.
This is now. Mine now.
Look at me. Look at me.
I can't.
I'm
you turned
the
your camera off.
Now.
Just waiting for one of us to talk there, right?
I can't look at you.
All right, let's put aside the fantasy aspect of the draft and wrap up with this here. From the real world implications of how the draft went, give me your big winner and your big loser from draft night 2022 in Las Vegas.
Big loser, Arizona Cardinals, overpaid by giving away their first round pick for a wide receiver. And then with their second round pick, went out and got a tight end after extending Ertz.
Like it.
Big winner. I'll have to go Jets. I know it's easy to be a winner when you got three first round picks, but I think they went out and they nailed it.
My big loser, I'm going with the Chargers I mean, they kind of helped their first pick offensive lineman, which I guess they needed a little bit of help, but they were still an above average line last year. And then it just seemed like they got a bunch of filler picks. I mean, they drafted a running back, I guess, for whenever Eckler gets injured inevitably, but it just they didn't really, for a team that's trying to make that next step in what looks to be right now the most competitive division in football, I don't think they really gained or kept ground. I think they lost ground compared to what the other teams did. Biggest winner, I have to give it to the Ravens. They managed to get great value in Hamilton, who dropped a bit. And then, like, just the rest of the draft, I mean, they ended up giving David Ajabo in the second because no one wanted to touch him. And they were okay with doing that because they had 6 fourth-round picks and just picked players that can potentially play right away. Like, just the amount of value they got for all of their picks was crazy. So, easy one is the Ravens.
Yeah. You'd almost make the argument that the Ravens somehow win the draft every year. Like, they always seem to come out on top and hit on all of their picks. So, phenomenal front office over there. Not like the roller coaster ride that is the Philadelphia Eagles, where you never know what you're going to get out of them. But again, my loser is going to be the New England Patriots. And I think this is finally the year where Belichick's shtick of, all right, I'm just going to take the guys I like, I don't care where other people have them, finally comes back and bites them. Like, taking Cole Strange 29th overall, who could be a phenomenal player for, you know, a lot of people think very highly of him. They just think that he got taken like 70 picks too early. Like, they're just not using their draft capital in any smart way, shape, and or form here. And same thing with Tyquan Thornton. Like we already said, again, here's someone who's got a lot of speed, but he's got kind of that one dimension to his game. He's far from a polished, complete package wide receiver, and he's going number 50 overall. So he was someone who was maybe going to be late third round, was sort of the draft pick, and here they have him in the second round. So they're just reaching on everything. I don't think they brought in anyone who's truly going to move the needle. So even though they reached on some players, they're kind of like role players. Like Thornton might get in there behind a couple of their wide receivers, but does anyone in New England ever really put up numbers unless you were Randy Moss or Julian Edelman? Not really. Like, it's not a great draft class for them. You already mentioned the Ravens as a winner, so I won't do them. I won't be a homer and pick the Eagles, even though I think that they finally went
out. That's what I assumed, that was off the board.
Yeah.
I would have gone Casey all the way.
I'll avoid them. What I will say is I'm just going to give it to the entire state of New York. All three of the New York teams had phenomenal drafts, from the Buffalo Bills going out there and addressing their one big, big need, which was DB. Anyone who saw that Kansas City Chiefs playoff game knows that they couldn't stop a nosebleed out there. So they needed help in the secondary. He's a little bit raw, but he's not going to be expected to be, you know, their cornerback one out there lining up against the team's best receiver right away. White can still do that. They can ease him into action. He's got a lot of talent. James Cook coming in, we already mentioned him. Underheralded player here, who, if you look him up on YouTube, he's like a viral sensation. But the punter out of San Diego State, Matt Araiza, punt god is his name, and they got him in the sixth round. So again, under the radar pickup right there. You already mentioned the Jets, how they, against all odds, didn't outjet themselves and actually hit on, I think, all three of their top three picks. But then the New York Giants, as much as I hate giving them any kind of praise whatsoever in the NFC East, I will give them the fact that that draft could not have worked out any better for them if they tried. Getting Kayvon Thibodeau, who is arguably the best defensive lineman in the draft, could have potentially gone number one overall for a large part of the year, was still talked about as the number one prospect in the draft, kind of fell off towards the end. And then they got Evan Neal at seven, who, again, maybe 2 weeks before the draft, 3 weeks before the draft, was still being talked about as the number one overall pick, until all of a sudden Trayvon Walker shot up there and the Jags fell in love with him. So they got arguably the best player on the defensive line and the best player on the offensive line in the entire draft. So I hate to do it, but I'll give them a little props right there as well too. So the entire state of New York had themselves a weekend.
Yep, they did.
And I agree with you. I agree with you. New England sucked at their draft. They basically did what You know, whenever you try to do a mock draft for fantasy before the season, and there's always the odd one you do where some guy comes in and picks Geno Smith number one overall just to screw with everyone, and then you're like, all right, I'm leaving, and you go to another mock draft. That is how the New England Patriots drafted this year.
And could I do want to give out, there's one other team that I thought had a really good draft. I didn't say it because I wanted to steal anyone's, but I think the Seattle Seahawks actually had a really good draft. It's weird that they finally decided to invest in the O-line after they traded Russell Wilson, but I think two of their first four picks were offensive tackles, and they managed to get one of the better offensive tackles in the draft. They got their running back for whenever the rest of the crew inevitably gets injured, so they don't lose pace there. And they just signed, like, they just drafted a lot of wide receivers just to see if anything else sticks there. I think Seattle improved their team quite a bit. I don't know if it'll be enough to help their season overall, but it's okay, because if they draft a quarterback next year, well, they already have two bookends at tackle for them.
Shocked that Bo Melton wasn't a New England Patriots draft pick. He went to Rutgers. Like, Bill Belichick is good for at least two Rutgers picks a season. So,
right?
Yeah. Wild stuff. Unbelievable.
They did get Seattle. Like, they got a couple aggressive cornerbacks, one of them who has ridiculous potential if he can figure it out. Cause I mean, you don't really see too many 6'4" cornerbacks. No. Right? Like, they managed to get one in the fifth there. And yeah, they even got if you believe the player comparisons that NFL pundits always do, where it's like, this player plays like this. Well, that's the case. And they got their Frank Clark replacement too. So with Boye Mafe.
Yeah, but Craig, has he played against any SEC cornerbacks?
Yes. Yes, Eric. Yes. I hate to tell you. I know you're right. That's the pinnacle. That's all that matters. But
boys, pleasure as always. For those that are listening, we've got season two of the Dynasty League podcast coming up. That'll fire up probably in August as we start inching ever closer to draft nights, which usually take place in September. And if you're not drafting in September, call your league commissioner right now and tell them to give their head a shake, because every single year these leagues draft way too early, and then someone blows out an ACL in the third preseason game and completely derails your season or something like that. So
I get it. You guys are excited, but like, just do a bunch more mocks. Like, don't go real draft
yet. Don't do it.
And let me tell you something about season two. All right, Craig, you are not going to woo us into soft interviews. Our questions this year will be hard hitting, and our punishments will be punishments. There won't be any of this leisurely stroll down Hot Sauce Lane that you were afforded last year. It was very much leisurely.
It was not.
That's not true. That's not true.
You're the guy who dumps half a bottle of the most ridiculous sauce on every slice of pizza. No, come on. It was.
Yeah, well, that's not called the gauntlet for no reason.
I was sufficiently punished that night and the morning after.
I'm going to purposely lose the bet that requires us to do the gauntlet again, just to show.
It will not happen. You will be punished for something else, because it would not be a punishment.
I'm going to source some crazy hot sauces from like the dark web that's just going to show up, and the container is going to be vibrating. We're going to have like welding masks on just to handle it. And that'll be Eric's punishment this year.
Yeah. Take his keys away because he'll be hallucinating.
Yeah.
The good news is Eric finished the gauntlet in 15 minutes. Bad news is he is now blind permanently.
It'll be the Simpsons episodes there where you have to coat your throat with candle wax to be able to drink the stuff.
Great episode.
Really well.
All right, folks. Season two coming at you later this summer. Until then, pleasure as always, gentlemen. Enjoy the NFL offseason. Make sure that your favorite wide receivers don't get suspended. And that's a wrap for another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. As always, want to give a quick shout out to our guests today, Craig Anich and Eric Long from the Dynasty League Podcast, for stopping by and talking all things NFL draft and fantasy implications. You can check that out, which will go live later this summer as they prepare for season two to get you all set for your fantasy football drafts. While you're at it, head over to dinespressbox.com. Check out all of the great articles and content we're putting up there daily, and swing by the Dine Sports YouTube YouTube page to check out our latest partnership with Future Watch, where we'll be breaking down all the latest and greatest news, prospect profiles, mock drafts and comparisons, and more heading into the 2022 NHL entry draft later this year. Until next time, folks, thanks for listening. Like, share, subscribe. We'll see you guys again next time.